Fear Factor and Family Matters. I don't have to go very far in inviting you to remember and recall an experience of deep fear that you've had. Fear is primal to the human experience. It is never far from us, from our consciousness, from our behavior, from our faith even, from the way in which we live. Fear penetrates our lives. We have reminded ourselves several times that in the Bible you may find 365 variations of the phrase, fear not or be not afraid. 365, that's a nice number, don't you think? Every single day we need to be reminded of the pernicious ways and the captivating and paralyzing ways that fear can get a hold of us and our lives. We need to be reminded. Fear. This week, in preparation for the message, I've been recalling, what are the things that I've experienced that have caused me deep, deep fear? You don't have to go far into my memory to recall them. Certainly the one that comes out, that jumps out most to me, is that night, that very tragic and traumatic night in which my brother and I were attacked and he was killed. And the fear I felt when I sought to fight for my life. Or remember another occasion when we were serving in Jamaica in a very difficult circumstances in the inner city. And we were building this human development center as a way of trying to engage the realities of violence and poverty and all of those things that circumscribe the life of the people with whom we stood in solidarity as a church. And one day we had to confront the crime boss of that community, whose role usually meant that any kind of project that was undertaken, you had to come and pay extra money in order just to build your project. And remember our church gathering together and praying. And I remember me sending a message with one of the people I knew in the community to him and asking for an appointment to come and see him. And I was afraid. I remember that day as I walked down the lane and outside stood his bodyguards armed. My chest was pounding, sweating under my clergy shirt. And I walked in through the heavily fortified gate. And there he was sitting under his little shed, kind of holding court. And with every step, I could barely feel my feet touching the ground. My heart was pounding so much. And I sat down in front of him and we began to talk about what we as a church were trying to do. And about what we needed from him. In that circumstance, I thank God for the prayers of the people because it didn't prevent me from saying what needed to be said. And it turned out okay in that instance. It's not always like that. Those are the very dramatic kinds of examples, but through my life as well, there is fear for all kinds of things that I need to be reminded of God's promise and God's invitation to put that fear in a proper context. Fear that on this Father's Day, as I think about my children, that maybe I haven't done a good enough job parenting them, fathering them. Fear that I have not been the kind of child to my parents at times as I visit my mother suffering from Alzheimer's. We can make and fill in the blanks for our own lives. What do we fear? This past week, went to the on-call chaplains meeting. I was reminded as Barbara was talking about her time away. And there we were given a presentation by a palliative nurse who talked about their work of gracefully helping people die well, ushering them into a good death. And what she was saying to this interfaith ecumenical group of on-call chaplains is that we as an interdisciplinary team at the hospital need you as clergy to do your work well, to prepare your congregants, whether Muslim or Jewish or Hindu or Christian, prepare them well for death, prepare them in life to engage the reality of death. Talk about it. Invite them to use the resources of their faith, because we find when we come around families and those who are dying, that those who are able to draw down on a faith resource do much better. Their fear is there, but it is held at bay and put in proper context. So we need to talk about fear. Jesus wasn't afraid to talk about fear. Jesus told his disciples, that they now must go out and proclaim the message that they had heard from him, that they had seen embodied in his life. But it was going to be rough. Just as they have thrown slings and arrows at me and done me harm, they will do you harm also, Jesus said. But he gives them three reasons. Four times he mentions fear in this text, and three reasons why they need not fear to that paralyzing form. First of all, the truth will win out. All that is in secret will become uncovered. So sometimes we are afraid. That if we speak up, nobody will hear our side of it, and so we don't talk. Sometimes we are afraid to say what needs to be said and do what needs to be said because people will think otherwise of us, and we are constrained and burdened. Sometimes we are afraid that we will not be accepted if we don't go along with the crowd. That we know deep in our heart that it is not right, whether at work or in community or in family, it's not right to do that, to say that, to act that way. But we will not be accepted, and oh, we need to be accepted to feel good about ourselves. And so we are afraid, and we walk around not with obvious burdens on us, but burdens in our hearts that constrain us from doing the right thing. And sometimes our fear ushers us even to the place of death, afraid that our lives will, in the end, have meant nothing. Afraid that somehow we have not mattered. We have not been loved. We have not been affirmed. Afraid of death. Afraid of what comes after. Afraid that we will be alone. And we are under that burden. His disciples knew these. But Jesus says, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Do not be constrained by those things that harbor the capacity to paralyze you. Don't be afraid. Do this. Recognize the truth will win out. Recognize that those who oppose you and oppose the truth have limited power. And you recognize, and get this one straight, you recognize that you are inestimably valuable to me, says Jesus. You are valuable to me. Two sparrows fall, and you think God doesn't even notice that? How much more will God notice you? God is in the details of your life. Don't be afraid. You will find opposition when you try to do the right thing. But that they who oppose you and that which opposes you is limited in power. God's power is greater. Do not be afraid even of death, for I am the life and the resurrection. And you are so valuable to me. Don't be afraid. Put your fear in the proper place. Fear God. In other words, reverence God. Be in awe of God. Channel your fear into a holy undertaking that says, God, I'm going to trust you with my life. I'm going to put my hope in you, and I'm going to stand humbly but tall and speak the words of life that people need to hear. Do the actions of grace and generosity and justice that people need to have life and life abundant. And Jesus knows that it is so imperative that we get that right in order to make sense of the second part of his call. Jesus said, I am not come to bring peace, peace to the earth, but bring a sword. My coming, you know what it's going to do? It's going to set father against son. This is Father's Day. What kind of word is that to us? Set mother against daughter, father-in-law against son-in-law, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law. What kind of Jesus is this? In order to understand the import of those words, we need to appreciate first century Palestine. And even before and after, the family was everything, so to speak. Your relationship with the family guaranteed security as far as it could. For the poor, that was not the case very much. It guaranteed reputation. It guaranteed genealogy. It guaranteed pedigree. It guaranteed all kinds of things. People tended not to leave their families. Hence, that story about the prodigal son is a very unique one. They tended not to do that. They stayed in the family system. And in large measure, there were some good things about that. But, like then, even as now, we know that the family can sometimes be an excuse for the hidden oppression that causes people pain. You, like I, were saddened yesterday with the news and a memory. I mean, glad to, in a sense, he was convicted, but with the news of that father in California accused of killing, now convicted killing, was it 8 or 9 of his children? The stories we hear again and again of physical abuse and sexual abuse within families. So we know there are some deep, dark, nasty secrets about families. And so when we hear platitudes such as, family, there's nothing more important than family. You ever hear that? Maybe you've said it yourself. Somehow we have to wrestle with the reality that families can be that gardens, those gardens of nurture and life and hope and power and confidence and encouragement that help launch us into the persons we are meant to be. But too often they can also be systems of abuse, systems of circumscription that cause us to be less than we are intended to be. And so somehow we have to speak the truth. So when Jesus says, I have come not to bring peace, things are not going to be as they were. The order of things that hold those secrets in place and confine people. But I've come to be a sword. But the kind of sword, because Jesus is not interested in violence. The kind of sword that Jesus brings is a cross. A cross that says, the sword I bring is going to be to sacrifice myself for the truth. To sacrifice myself in such a way that people will be forced to confront their fear, confront their lies, confront their actions, confront those things that are unjust. This is the form of my sword. It's not come to cut people and chop them and stab them. It has come to show them. Do your worst to me, and the truth will live. Do your worst to my life, and I will rise again. Speak the truth. It's going to hurt. And it's going to cause divisions in family when a child can find her or his voice, empowered maybe by a teacher or a neighbor, to stand up to father or mother or brother or whomever and say, I will take it no more. You have done your worst to me, but now I have found family-like people who will help me. Can you see it? The truth of Jesus' presence and life will cause division between father and son, mother and daughter, when the truth is spoken. It is not that Jesus is against family. On the cross, one of his last acts was to say to his mother, who would be bereaved and saddened at losing her son, woman, behold your son, to John the disciples, and thereby forms a new family. Largely because Jesus' own family, his brothers and sisters, abandoned him and thought he was crazy. And so he wanted his mother to be in the responsible care of another. So Jesus loves family and sees the importance, but it is not the be-all and end-all. It must not come before God. Sometimes our allegiances to family causes us to be less generous than we need to be, causes us to be afraid to do the right thing and to be just, causes us not to risk as we ought to risk for the world, not only those that belong to us, but for others also. So when we stand with the will of God and seek the kingdom, all is relativized. The good of family is maintained. The desire that all the world be blessed is lifted up as an urgent requirement. That is good news, I believe. maybe seemingly in a backhanded way on this Father's Day. It is good news of a loving Father who cares for all His children, not some who believe they're more privileged than others, but all His children in the world. In order for us to do that, and that's hard, trust me, I feel it too. We need to get a hold of the fear, because it's hard to do what's against the grain and to stand for the truth. The cross leads us and empowers us, and the grace of God emboldens us. That's good news. We need each other to do this. Remember, the hairs on your head, even if you don't have hair on your head, the follicles are numbered. Why should I feel discouraged? Why should the shadows come? Why should my heart be lonely and long for heaven and home? When Jesus is my portion, my constant friend is He. For His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He watches me. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He watches me. Whenever I am tempted, whenever clouds arise, when songs give place to sighing, when hope within me dies, I draw the closer to Him. From care He sets me free. For His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He watches me. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He watches me. Let not your heart be troubled. His tender word I hear, and resting on His goodness, I lose my doubts and fears. Though by the path He leadeth, but one step I may see, His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He watches me. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He watches me. If you know the chorus, sing with me, please. I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. For His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He watches. And I know He watches you, 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 and I know He watches me. Amen.